we'll move on to the Halliday thing, because this is somebody you got to know a little bit as you covered the Toronto Blue Jays through the 2000s, among many of your duties. The 10th anniversary of his perfect game pitching for the Phillies down in Florida will go Friday. ESPN has an E60 episode coming out detailing the life and times of Roy Halliday. How do we appropriately juxtapose, intertwine the greatness of the pitcher while understanding, as we have come to, that he absolutely was a human being with struggles like the rest of us?
Well, yeah, it's... I guess that's it. You know, it's that he is a human. He was a sad and tortured human being in a lot of ways. I think this has been tricky for people. I'm going to say, look, yeah, I covered Roy Halliday with the Jays, and there are guys who were there absolutely every day covering the Jays. I'm a columnist. I was in and out. But you could talk to guys who were beat writers who were in that clubhouse every day when Roy Halliday was there, and they would tell you that they didn't get to know him very well. That, you know, he was a very... You know, the whole kind of focus and attention to detail and, you know, kind of distance that he created around himself, not just with the media, but with his teammates. You know, the guys talking about that, you could talk to guys on that team, they said it was like they felt like they were walking on eggshells when they were around Roy, because that's the way, you know, that was kind of his game face, but that was kind of his everyday face. And I did a big, long sit-down interview with him for Sportsnet after he retired. And I got to say, that's the only time, you know, I ever felt like I was getting, you know, closer to the human being involved. And of course, we weren't getting very close to the human being involved even there, mm-hmm. you know, because of what we know. And, you know, largely because, you know, I think the reason, obviously the nature of his death and the toxicology report after his death has told us a lot. But, you know, I think what's happened is that his wife Brandy has opened up and decided to tell the story, because that's, I think this was a circle of two. I'm not sure how many other people really knew what was going on with Roy. And I don't know about anybody else, but I just feel kind of a deep sadness when I hear about it. I know he was looking for something after baseball. You know, after he couldn't pitch, he was looking for a specific kind of a coaching job. You know, he wanted to be kind of a mental coach and eventually got that role with the Phillies. He was back and forth between the Jays and the Phillies looking for that kind of job, something, but he wanted something very, very specific. And I think he was searching for something, you know, like, I don't want to pretend again that I knew more than I know, but for something to replace what pitching was for him, going back to the time when he was a little kid and his, you know, dad was, his coach and kind of drove him hard, and, you know, he was fully 100% committed to becoming a great pitcher. But yeah, we know, I guess the lesson is, you pull back the curtain on a Superman, and sometimes you understand, and then you understand that we're all, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat here on some level, that we all have our insecurities and our failings, and our dark nights of the soul. And it's an instructive lesson, you know, because we do put people on pedestals and we treat them as though they're kind of immortals, and because they have great physical gifts, because they can do things the rest of us can't do. And it's, I guess it's important to understand, you know, the humanity and the vulnerability there. That's, you know, I say that without, like everybody else, without having any great intimate knowledge of what Roy Halliday was going through.
Stephen Brunt, one of the co-hosts of Writer's Block, our guest. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What is your sense of where things are at, Stephen, as we just unbelievably careen here toward the start of June? I can't believe that this time next week we'll be right at the end of May. Where the MLB and the MLBPA are on whatever the financial arrangements will be to get baseball in some form back on the field. And there are reports over the last 24 hours or so that the owners may be willing to give, for lack of a better way to put it, just a little bit more. Do you sense that they're going to meet in the middle here somehow, some way?
I sense that they have to play, because I think there's going to be an enormous amount of pressure on them to play. The other sports are going to go ahead. Now, again, something could go haywire between now and July, so that you always have to kind of put that asterisk on it and say, you know, the world could be in flames by July, and maybe that would change things. But I think what we are seeing now, especially in the United States, is this barreling ahead, you know, kind of the decision to kind of consequences be damned. Let's get back to normal. And there is a political element to that, so let's not forget that. But you heard Andrew Cuomo, who's been a very sensible guy through all of this, saying, let's go back, let's get the teams back in New York, let's have them train back in training in New York. I fully believe now that in the fall that, you know, again, with a bunch of asterisks attached, but that there will be fans in NFL stadiums because of this push to make it normal and feel normal. And again, the political sense of the political desire to make it normal in the fall as an election approaches. That would be reckless probably, and I'm sure epidemiologists would be tearing their hair out. But look, if I was guessing right now, I would guess on the side of recklessness. So, you know, in that context, if you're, you know, baseball players and owners, if this thing hits the rocks over money, I'm not sure that's going to fly. You know, and again, however legitimate those concerns are, and I'm not saying that the players' concerns about getting, you know, shafted here are wrong. They should look after their out for their interests. And there's an entirely different labor history in baseball than there is in other sports, and it's a different economic system than in other sports. You don't have the checks and balances there, and they should have questions answered about, you know, how much money is actually coming in and what's a fair split, and, you know, also how is this going to impact 2021 in terms of free agency. You know, what's the marketplace going to look like in the winter? If baseball players should be looking further ahead than this summer and saying, hang on a second, you know, this is a free market, and sometimes free markets work the other way. This could be a really desperate winter for us if baseball has a terrible summer, and if especially if it doesn't play, but even looking ahead and if they don't know they can put fans in the stands. So I assume a deal will be done because I'm not sure there's going to be much choice. I'm not sure a deal can be done by June the 1st, but, you know, that's kind of an arbitrary date. 82 games is arbitrary. You know, everything's in play here, right? Like, it's all horse trading now. So, but I can't imagine them not playing while basketball plays and hockey plays and the NFL plays and European soccer leagues are all playing. If they are the lone holdout, I think that will be a very difficult thing to maintain, a very bad look for baseball. Again, whether it's fair or not, and whether the gripes are legitimate or not about money, you know, it's kind of about optics. And I think the optics would be horrible for baseball if they don't play and everyone else plays.
Yeah, I think it's going to be it'd be a terrible look if they can't get back on the field through a contract dispute about money. It's going to not look good. Well, you mentioned the NBA looking like it's coming back to their one hub in Orlando, and now hockey with the NHL finally decide on a 24-team playoff format. We have now Carolina and the Lightning didn't vote for that. You had one team saying, well, we want to play games that mean something. They don't want to do that exhibition games. And then you got Carolina not wanting to do it because they've made the playoffs and now they have to have a play-in round. Were you kind of surprised more teams didn't vote for that, this 24-team proposal?
Does any of that stuff seem wildly relevant right now? Like, I guess that would be mm-hmm. the question. As you step back and you say, yeah, I understand, that's not totally fair. It would be better to, you don't really want to be playing games that don't matter if you're going to come back and go through all this rigmarole you're going to have to go through to come back. You don't want to play exhibition games, but, just a little bit of perspective would suggest, you know, this ain't going to be perfect. Because perfect stopped being an option about 3 months ago. So, you know, I'd be interested to hear what the counter suggestion would be. You know, what's the counter position here? Look, this thing is a compromise. It's made up. It's different. It's going to be different than anything we've ever seen before. Somebody is going to be at a competitive disadvantage here. Somebody's going to have, you know, and two teams are going to be in the playoffs who wouldn't have been in the playoffs otherwise. It's not, yeah, this is not your, you know, true test regular season leading to a finite number of teams in the playoffs in the way that it's, you know, that it's always been. But I say that's not an option here. So I just think that's the least of it, you know. Like, look, mm-hmm. there's a whole bunch of stuff to work out here in terms of the health and safety parameters and you know, where they're going to be and, you know, how the money's going to work and all of those things. that stuff just seems like small cheese to me. Again, I'm not a hockey player, but to me, that doesn't seem like that big a deal compared to everything else.
Mm-hmm. Steven, I don't think we've gotten your take on a potential Maple Leafs Blue Jackets first round series, which under the format would be how things line up. You've got the high scoring and relatively high goals against Maple Leafs against the very, very low scoring, but also they don't allow many goals either, Columbus Blue Jackets. Do you think there's an advantage one way or the other? Considering,
God knows, man.
Yeah, well, no, but consider,
God knows.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, could this be like early October hockey, right? Where it's all offense and systems aren't really in place yet, or could John Tortorella get his guys to lock it down?
I think if you're a Leaf fan, you'd love it to be run and gun. That would be a game they could, mm-hmm. that they would love to play that game. I'd love to watch that game too, but I honestly don't know. The only thing we've, you know, again, and they're not comparables, but the only team sport we've really been able to watch is German soccer, right? Which is the only one that's up and running right now. Japanese baseball, Taiwanese baseball, or Korean baseball and Taiwanese baseball. But, you know, the soccer is a little bit of a comparable, I guess, because they had a long break and then they had a short training and they've come back. And it looks like early season football, like early season soccer. There's been a lot of pretty plays. You know, there's some really great goals scored. I'm not sure it has quite the intensity that it would have if those stadiums were full of fans and if it felt like it was coming down to the crunch in a normal season. So maybe that's kind of a realistic expectation that it will be like very early season hockey, and that you hope over the course of this playoff tournament that it picks up in intensity and that the guys kind of forget about the context and are just, you know, where they are thinking, okay, it's this chance to win a Stanley Cup. And, you know, for some of them, a really unexpected chance to win a Stanley Cup, a second life. So, but it's so hard to know, you know, we don't have a blueprint for this one, boys. You know, we have no yeah. precedent. We have, you know, you can look at baseball in the split season in 81 or something, but it kind of, as I recall, it looked like baseball when they came back. But it's such a different sport, right? It's a sport of fine motor skills. It's not a sport of trying to fight people for possession of the puck or, you know, impose your physical will. It's different. And in sports that are kind of adrenaline driven that way, and I would assume that some of that has been, you know, sapped out of the out of hockey players, and the season must seem distant to them, and it's summertime, and, you know, there's some of them on skates, but they haven't played. You know, it's going to be very hard to kind of snap back into playoff mode. But again, what's the option here? I look forward to seeing it, and then at the end, if we say, boy, that wasn't like it used to be, or that didn't feel like a Stanley Cup playoff, at least we'll have seen one. You know, at least we'll be able to have that conversation afterwards, rather than, boy, we just went 9 months without hockey or whatever it would be, you know, whenever it would come back without anything. Yeah, I'm like, because, look, again, everything I see here is predicated on the assumption that the next hockey season will not start until 2021,
right?
Calendar 2021. So it's a long way. You know, that's a lot of those are a lot of empty months. So yeah, this may feel interim, and it may feel exhibition-y or early season. It may feel like the early season, but I think they've got, again, for a bunch of reasons, they got to play.